You're listening to The Screencast, a slasher podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Olga, and today we're discussing Scream 3.
Ooh, the scariest of movies. It's really not very scary, this particular. I feel like with each film, they get a little bit less scary.
Yeah.
But there's some fun to be had here. So, shall we give them the backstory as far as your sleeping?
Pretty sure, maybe, no. Have we brought it up already?
Probably. It's been a while.
Let's refresh their memory. Fine. Okay. So we watched this back in when? October? November?
Probably November.
And I was tired. And at some point, all the murders lulled me into a sense of security. And I had a blanket on me. And we were cozy. And I fell asleep. Mm-hmm. And Dan didn't notice. And when he did, it was most of the movie had gone by already. So he just stopped it and let me sleep. And now, months later, we...
I was so sutured into this experience. could not even realize that my girlfriend was asleep. That's how intensely powerful this film is for me.
But you know what really surprises me? Even... all of these movies, even, like, while I was still awake during Scream 3, I heckle them. Yeah. Like, I am pretty vocal about how dumb certain things are. Yeah. How did you not notice?
I don't know. I don't know.
I must have been really enjoying myself, is probably what you were thinking.
Oh, man.
So, anyway.
Well, yeah, so one other housekeeping thing, because we haven't been around since Christmas, so I just want to say, like... sorry.
Oops.
We've been doing our podcast on the CW show The 100, and that takes up a lot of time. I'm also still doing my Girl Meets World 1, and since there wasn't any slasher show of note on, though there is that show Slasher,
which I still haven't watched.
But I don't know if that's actually of note. But maybe it is. I'm not gonna hate having not seen it, but it's a small, minor channel, and I haven't heard that many people talking about it.
Mm.
But, Yeah, we're focusing on other things, but The 100 will be over by the time, or there might be time it overlap, but The 100 should be over around when Scream starts up again, and yeah, so we'll be back more once The 100's over, but in the meantime, we had a break from The 100 for a couple weeks, and we thought we would delight your ears with our beautiful presence.
Yeah.
And talk about this grand film.
Yeah, definitely.
My basic thoughts here. So I've seen this film more times than I care to have.
I was going to say, you have made it very clear from the beginning, like from when we were discussing me watching Scream for the first time, and you were like, ugh, the third one. It's like definitely the worst. Mm. And I mean, I haven't seen Scream 4 yet.
Yeah.
But I'm inclined to agree.
Well, the thing is, I'm actually kind of torn, because even though I definitely think, like, objectively it is the worst, as far as, like, even just, like, acting-wise, there's a lot of mistakes, and, like, there's just, like, a lot of, like, it's not very horrific, you don't really care about what's happening for most of it, it's just so bombastic and over the top. But at the same time, I kind of think, overall, I think I enjoy 3 more than 2. Just because I think 3 is more fun than 2.
Definitely. It definitely has more just comedy in it. Yeah. It's, like, meant to be hilarious.
Yeah. Well, by the end there, it's stupid. Like Scooby-Doo. We're, like, in a haunted mansion, and we're just bumbling around. And so, like, here's the thing. I think that, like, on my first watch of 2 and 3, I think I liked 3 better. It's just that now, the things that 3 does better, enjoyable, it's hard to watch that again and again.
Yeah.
And I think that it's probably the movie that feels the most like it needed editing of the franchise. It felt too long, especially on this rewatch.
Absolutely. Yeah. It 2 hours. I just don't see the need. Like, so much stuff could have been cut down.
Yeah.
But then, would it have just been completely blah at that point? Like, would they have had time for the humor that they wanted to have?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You could have cut 15 minutes out of this movie without a problem.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe, like, I personally think you should have cut a half hour out, but that might have cut into the good stuff. Mm-hmm. But, like, 15 minutes you could easily have done.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's some good parts. This is, as far as I think, and my general idea of what the fans think of this movie, I do think most people think this is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
But if people disagree, feel free to tweet us at ScreamPod and say, you guys are stupid, this is the best one ever, oh my god. And
this is what our listeners sound like?
Yes.
If you also want to disprove Dan with what you sound like, then do that somehow. Jeez. What? I did enjoy a lot of... Again, it's like super star-studded.
Yeah.
Like before they were big. Yeah. Or rising, so yeah. to speak. And that kind of surprises me for this movie that people would...
I mean, not... What are you saying as far as the script goes?
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, it was a phenomenon, and, like, even 2 did very well, and it was, like, it was seen as, like, a fun, hip thing to do, I think. It's sort of in the way that, like, 30 Rock was, you know? Like, even if it wasn't, I mean, the difference is that being that 30 Rock was also critically acclaimed. Yeah. but, I mean, Scream 1 was very critically acclaimed.
That's true.
And so there was a sort of just like, this is the hip Hollywood thing to do and all that jazz. But also there is the factor that it was kind of before they were really big for a lot of them.
Yeah.
It's like they said, like they didn't actually get David Schwimmer, you know?
right. Ha ha ha, David Schwimmer.
Yeah.
Courtney Cox. Man. Ha ha. Sorry.
Ha 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 ha. All right. So any particular point that you liked or any particular point that you hated that you want to throw out before we go into the characters?
I really didn't like the Gale and Dewey stuff. It felt like a total rehash of 2.
Yeah.
That was just like,
yeah.
They had nothing better to do with those characters, and...
I feel like Gale and Dewey are pretty good in 2, and that's, like, the only time that they're pretty good. Like, in 3, and the thing is, okay, individually, like, their characters, I think, were kind of fine. Like, even Gale was maybe her best as a person this movie, as far as she really was just going after the truth, and she didn't, like, leave Dewey out of spite, she left him for her career, so there's actually an interesting little feminism thing going on there.
Yeah, but, like, there definitely is.
Yeah, but their relationship, I guess, don't care about.
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't ever really care about it, and now it's just being dragged out and rehashed for so much. Like, especially when you end on their engagement, I'm just like, I don't feel, am I supposed to care? This thing is, the movie is so ridiculous that I'm not even sure if I'm supposed to care.
Yeah, like, yeah. As for something I really liked, I actually really liked Sydney.
Yeah,
this movie. I think maybe this is the most I've liked Sydney.
Yeah, and I think, I talked about acting, she sort of, in some ways, shone a spotlight on everybody else because she was so good that it felt like everybody was a little bit more cartoony around her.
Well, it feels like that was on purpose, too.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, maybe not in comparison to her, but, like, that everyone else is so cartoony.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's her being, like, serious and bringing the weight to the role of, like, trauma that she's experienced.
Yeah, so. I think definitely she feels like a real person, the acting is good, and she's smart in this movie, as much as some character in Scream can be smart, and I don't think
she did anything truly dumb.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. I mean, there is just the general thing of, like, going to the villain without the police thing at the end, but, like, was somewhat smart about hiding the gun and everything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 guns, that's Two how you do it.
Alright, shall we talk about trilogies a little bit?
Let's do it, since that was the big kahuna in this movie.
Yeah, so, well, actually, while we're here, start by saying, how do you feel about them bringing Randy back for that little cameo?
It was clever.
Yeah.
I have to say, that was clever, because he was their meta-narrative, like, person.
Yeah.
Explaining, not just to the characters, but to the viewer.
Yeah.
Kind of like what the mission statement of the movie is to either subvert or enhance or whatever.
Yeah.
Or exemplify. So the fact that he was there is like, of course Randy would.
Yeah.
Of course he would.
Yeah.
Like, have this prepared in case he gets murdered.
And I'm glad they did this. So obviously, like, I feel like this is clearly fan service.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I'm glad they did this rather than introduce a new character who would be the meta person for this movie. Especially in this, like, the third one. It's like just throwing in somebody new who's like him, but I feel like wouldn't have worked very well.
Like his sister.
Yeah.
Like his sister was there, but, like, she wasn't the one telling them, like... She just let the video play, which I appreciated.
Yeah. And so I think that was smart. And I actually, funnily enough, I think this is maybe when I like Randy the most. I actually found him a little funny and charming.
Mm-hmm.
And so I liked him. On the flip side, I actually think the use as far as meta goes was maybe the weakest in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know... And it might be just because they didn't have as much material to work off of. I don't feel like there are as many tropes about what the third movie is, especially even back, like, there might be even more now that we've had more movies and stuff since then. But especially, I don't think there's as many, he even says it's a rarity in the horror genre. Mm-hmm. And when he references, like, everything comes back to haunt you from the beginning, he doesn't really give an example as to where that's coming. Like, to me, when I think of a third, like, a thing near the end bringing back something from the beginning, I think of Scream 3. I think of them creating this idea. So maybe I'm wrong. Like, maybe there are things I don't know about from other things, but that, to me, they're sort of creating tropes here as opposed to... And then they go on and on about, like, the stakes are higher, anyone can die or whatever, and then they don't really go there.
They pull their punches on that. Unlike in 1 and 2.
Yeah.
They didn't pull their punches, and now it feels like they kind of
did. So that's the thing I was going to ask. So, like, the only thing that they really try to do is make you think, oh, maybe Sydney actually died, even though, I mean, I didn't actually think Sydney was going to die. But do you think they should have killed Dewey or Gale?
I mean, I made it pretty clear that I could not care less about their relationship. So, yeah, I think they should have.
I don't know how, like, to me, it's weird that this franchise kept those two people alive as long as they did. But at the same time, I don't know how you would have ended, like, it's because there's, like, sort of, like, in a weird, annoying way, the heart of the franchise. I don't know how you would have ended this on, like, anywhere remotely on a positive, happy note.
Yeah,
if they had died. You know, like, especially if one of them died and the other one was still alive, that would be, like, super, like, weird, but
really crappy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there would have been a way, but it's not the story they wanted to tell.
You know what I think they should have done is start off the movie with one of them die. Like, instead of Cotton, kill off, like, Gale at the beginning of the movie.
See, I feel like they wouldn't have killed Gale.
Well, Dewey, fine.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like...
Yeah.
But I get why they didn't.
Yeah.
Because of the whole, like, oh, they're the heart, they're the emotional thread through the films. It's like, who gives a crap?
I wonder if there are people out there that are, like, big Dewey Gale fans. I mean, I understand they're, like, silly and fun.
I mean, again, we kind of poked fun at them in 1 and 2.
Yeah.
But this one, it was just, like, 2 part 2.
Yeah, I agree.
But worse.
Yeah, totally.
Not as interesting.
Yeah.
So you wanted to talk about trilogies.
Yeah, sorry, I got a little off track there.
Yeah, a little bit. We went back to the Dewey Gale hate that we are so proud of on the podcast. Can I just say, I mean, I, knowing even less than you about, like, the history of slashers and not being sure about where
all the
tropes come from and when they're subverted, but one of the things, just going back to Randy for a minute, that was kind of, like, the flaw of having him dead and on this recording, is you just have this one scene where he has to list off everything.
Yeah.
And no one, like... I mean, they bring up a few things, like, oh, but it's supernatural. Oh, you gotta, like, watch out. Like, there are small reminders after we see the VHS.
Yeah.
But it just kind of sucks that there isn't a character like that weaving the meta-narrative throughout the movie, so it's really jarring, unlike in 1 and 2.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly the very meta aspect of the movie set, but as far as calling it the tropes of a trilogy, it's all
that's
cramped.
What I mean. Yeah. And if that's kind of what they've been doing in 1 and 2, like, the tropes of a slasher, the tropes of a sequel, tropes of a trilogy, and I'm not even sure what they are, and then all of a sudden they're just thrown at me in, like, a 2-minute-long scene.
It
was a lot.
Especially because in like, 2 especially, it wasn't even just Randy. They had that whole debate in the classroom, you know? And so that was the beginning of the movie. It set the tone.
Exactly, exactly. Like, whereas here, it's like the tone shows, like, what the mission statement is in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
Other than, oh, look, they're targeting
someone. I will say that's kind of true of 1, too. Like, the majority of the trope stuff is actually, like, it's really... Scream 1 is known for the meta stuff, but that's only mostly because it was one of the first big movies to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you actually look at, like, they start, like, the real meta part of it doesn't really come, as far as I can remember, until, like, they're near the middle of the movie where they're in the video store debating who the killer is, and then at the very end, we start getting the tropes where Randy's in the party.
Living room, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that then I would argue that you can't start a movie off, or at least it's a riskier move and harder to pull off talking from the very beginning of a brand new series without setting up the universe first.
Actually, I should point out that from the very beginning, they're talking about Scary Movies on the phone call, and then they have Sydney, and they have Sydney making fun of, like, the big-titted blonde running up the stairs and all that stuff.
Right.
So there's that.
That's true. But still, that's kind of like, you know that that will continue being relevant, but
little sprinkles.
Right, but it's not Randy immediately like, let me talk to you about everything, and,
I like your Randy voice.
This is my Randy voice.
All right, so
I'm going to talk like this on the rest of the podcast. No, I'm not. No, you guys can keep listening. I won't.
Oh, man. So, as far as... Okay, back to trilogies. Yeah, so one thing I wanted to say is that they didn't really talk about that much about is that the third movie is very rarely the best. Like, in Scream 2, they made a big deal about, like, oh, sequels suck. Mm-hmm. And it almost felt like they didn't want to say that about trilogies here.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing, especially... And I feel like it's funny because... Even now, it's even more. I feel like since this movie came out, there's been even more third movies in a trilogy that are like known for like super sucking.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, even the examples where it's good or okay, it's usually not the one that people think is the best. It's usually number two that people think is the best.
Yeah, and it's hard to say like things like the Hunger Games. It was a trilogy, but then they turned the last movie into a two-parter, so it's like. The films aren't a trilogy anymore, so...
I mean, Breaking Dawn could have been the definitive Twilight movie, but they had to break it into two parts. Your face here.
Thankfully, this isn't a visual medium.
So, okay, I'm going to name off a few third movies in a trilogy that I like. This one is a little bit divisive. I really like Dark Knight Rises, and it's my favorite of the three. I think Dark Knight's probably better, but I like Rises a lot.
I had no idea that was your favorite.
Yeah, I like it a lot. To me, it's the most Batman of the Batman movie. Because Dark Knight is very, like, a Joker movie.
That's very true. I mean, I can see why you would say that,
Iron Man 3 I like. It's another one that's pretty polarizing. I think it's pretty strong, and I think it's debatable whether it's the best in the franchise.
I'm in agreement with you of these being, like, really good.
Yeah.
From what I understand with Iron Man 3, like, the first one set up a new kind of superhero movie.
Yeah.
I thought the second one was awful.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. So bad.
It's just awful.
Yeah.
And, you know, I haven't seen the third one, but I'm like, anything has to be better than that second one.
Without a doubt, 3 is better than 2, I'll say
that. Well, yeah. But it's like, way down low. Yeah. For 2, and then it's like, this is pretty good. It's up here. Yeah.
Which actually, I feel like there's a chance that Thor 3 will be better than Thor 2.
I should hope so. Yeah. Anyway, and then the last one that we both definitely agree on is Toy Story 3.
Yeah, which I think is, in our opinion, the best of the franchise.
I cry every time. I just can't. It's so beautiful.
And then ones we know people like are Return of the Jedi, 30 Indiana Jones, Return of the King, all the returns.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, I mean, Return of the Jedi is fine. I definitely think Empire is better, but yeah, Return, it's not like it's a disaster like the ones I'm about to mention, such as Spider-Man 3, X-Men 3, Godfather 3, Back to the Future 3, Terminator 3, Alien 3, and The Matrix 3.
Was it called Matrix 3?
No, I'm just the third Matrix. I don't
the
care.
The third Matrix, whatever it is.
The shitty Matrix. The second one's shitty too, I think.
Yeah, these are... Yeah. I haven't seen all of these, but the ones I have, I can agree, they are terrible.
And it's funny, because if I was going to put Scream 3 in here, I wouldn't put it as bad as some of these other ones. I would have put it, like, a middle place. It would be, like, passable. Mm-hmm. You know, like, kind of, actually, I would put Back to the Future 3 in the passable category, too. Like, it's not an awful movie, I just don't like it as much.
Right. I think most people are in agreement with you.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say there? Or should we just get into the characters a little bit more?
Well, you wanted to bring up Dexter, the show.
Oh, yeah. So, I thought it was funny, because when I first saw Dexter, the final season starts with something very similar to the trope they bring up in this movie, as far as it's, I won't spoil it, but without getting into specifics.
Honestly, if you're, it's been years since Dexter's been out, and the last season is just awful.
It's really bad.
It follows through with the third, well, in, the trend of, like, the last thing being awful.
Well, it's too bad, because I actually thought the first couple episodes were solid, and then it just got totally off the rails.
But anyway,
Well, there's the they follow the trope of something from the beginning that you never knew about, a secret backstory coming back, and suddenly changing, like, everything you thought about everything up to this point.
Everything. Yeah. Years of a show.
Yeah.
Destroyed. I'm sorry. I'm fine. Okay. But yeah, I definitely agree, and if you've seen it, if you've seen it, then you know what we're talking about. Yeah. And if you haven't, watch Dexter. Just stop at season 5.
All right. So let's start.
This is now the Dexter podcast.
Do we have anything else you want to say about Dewey or Gail or Sydney? I want to talk a little bit about the Sydney being in the compound and her job, the way they opened the movie.
Well, yeah. I was going to go back and address, like, her actually being the emotional, center of the movie.
Yeah.
And everything being taken so seriously, we know that her life is seriously affected, even if all these, like, shenanigans are happening around her. The fact is, like, they even carry that through with her job.
Yeah.
I like that. Of working, for, like, a women's crisis line. Yeah.
And there's a nice gender message there, too, I think.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And it just, even though that scene was super silent, like, there's no dialogue until she calls in, we can see just how everything has affected her to this point. Like, her paranoia, her security, her fear.
Yeah.
It was very powerful.
Yeah.
And really engaging.
Yeah, I agree. And she's smart. She has, she has a gun. She has the multiple security systems. Mm-hmm. She's off in the boonies with her little doggy.
Her fierce attack dog.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's really good. I think there's some solid stuff for her there. We should talk a little bit about the ghost or, like, is she going crazy aspect of this with, like, is she just hearing things? Or I think they definitely play with trying to get you to think maybe she's the killer.
Yeah, maybe.
I think that with mixed results. And there's a lot of things in this movie that I think are good on, like, the planning stages, and then weren't totally executed the way they, like, could have been.
Mm.
Like, because I think the idea of Mev, like, being like, is she going mad, is not a bad idea. It just came off a little hokey and was never. And I also just feel like the character of her mother is just not someone that I'm totally engaged with.
I mean, yeah, definitely. Because it's been since the first movie, and I can't say that really was, like, it was important in the first and second movie, but, like, not. It didn't really resonate with me. It didn't really hit, truly, like, even though everything started thanks to that. Yeah. This movie, being the third, is what emphasizes that, which happened before the first.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I definitely think, like, it's supposed to be, while she is being smart, it's just supposed to be, like, it's such a shame, it's so sad that this is, like, that we're kind of encouraging her to be alone in a way. Like, of course, your life is in danger at all times. This is what you should be doing. Like, but that's sad.
Yeah.
And as for the hokiness, it didn't really resonate to me as hokey so much as, like, confusing.
Yeah.
Like, why did they decide to do this? Yeah. But I kind of understand, because they want her to be an unreliable.
Yeah.
What's it called? Like,
narrator.
Usually, yeah, but she's not a narrator.
Protagonist.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe a voice, or I don't know. But it's one thing I was thinking is that they could have maybe used a back. We've never seen a flashback. We've never actually seen her having a positive moment with her mom, and I think that might have helped a little bit. I think that could have been good. I also think there's an interesting thing as far as if you're going to look into the gender politics of how they're writing Sydney throughout this movie and throughout this trilogy, is that they're definitely trying to do something positive. And I know that I've seen some people point out, like, the fact that they let her get so crazy or so paranoid or whatever and scared. It's like, they would never have a male protagonist do this. And it's one of those things where I'm like, I mean, I get where you're coming from, but at the same time, it makes her a full person.
It does.
Yeah. And she overcomes it. And and especially at the end, she actually has a nice little moment at the end where she leaves the door open. I think that's kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, it's more of a shame that, oh, they would never have a male protagonist. Yeah. That speaks to, like, the macho nature that we have instilled. Yeah. Like, this is actually probably how everyone should behave.
Exactly. And that's how I felt, like, when I watched, like, Alien 2 and Ripley is, like, destroyed by Alien 1.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that could be what everyone's like.
Yeah.
Exactly. Iron Man 3 is just like that.
There we go.
He has PTSD from Avengers.
Goodness.
So, there's... I think generally they do a good job here. Do you want to get into the other characters? Should we get into Cotton?
Oh, yeah. Let's just go into... I guess we're going to go, at this point, more or less, roughly by...
Death,
which is chronological, technically. I'm surprised that they started with Cotton.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, at least the first time I saw half of the movie, I had no idea what the premise was.
Yeah.
And it was really cheesy, and, like, he's supposed to be kind of not likable.
Yeah.
Because of everything up to now. And he's like, oh, he's still that person. He has fame, but he's still not very likable. And...
He's, like, kind of a more dickish Gale, in a way.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I personally think this is the weakest opener of the... I don't... It's debatable. Before might have a weaker... I don't know. But it's definitely the weakest opener yet, I think.
Okay.
And... But I don't think it's bad. Again, there's things in this that I'm like, this was good on paper. The idea of the voice changer making it sound like one of the other characters was a fun idea that I don't know that it ever got truly utilized to the best of its abilities.
Mm.
But I liked the face-off with him and his girlfriend thinking that it's him. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a solid moment. And it was, you know, it is a big death because Cotton is a major character.
Right. They started with a bang. Like, in a way, I kind of appreciate it that they didn't kill our rando.
Yeah, I agree.
To begin with. I mean, they did because of his girlfriend, but, like, Cotton was so highly involved and, like, killed immediately afterwards.
Yeah.
So I liked it. And, oh, God, 100% Cotton is the name of the show. Like, that's all I can think of when I think of the scene.
I thought that was funny.
It is, but, like, God, that is just... That sets the tone of, like, this is going to have a lot of ridiculousness in it.
I will say, too, that there's a lot of things where they want you to care just innately because people are people, I think, and that doesn't always work for me because, like, we don't, again, similar to how we never get a flashback to Sydney and her mom having a positive relationship, we don't get the nice romantic scene between Cotton and his girlfriend before they face off to kill
each
other.
He just immediately starts flirting with a random woman on the phone.
Yeah, exactly. So,
like,
it's,
thanks, Cotton.
That kind
douche.
Of makes you lose any sort of emotional resonance. You're like, yeah, whatever.
Exactly.
And speaking of someone who I have no emotional resonance with, Sarah Darling.
Also known as Jesse McCarthy.
Is that her name? You know better than
it's
me.
It's not Jesse. Melissa. Nope.
Melissa McCarthy.
They're actually cousins.
Are they really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
This actress and whatever. She's an anti-vaxxer and Jim Carrey's ex-girlfriend and is bonkers and she's with, like, one of the Wahlberg.
No.
Whatever. She's annoying. I don't like her. So that kind of carried through into my opinion of this movie.
I think that her death was solid. So this is a good sort of way to bring up more of the movie set stuff because they do have, you know, so they have nice little commentaries about films in general and about how her part is so whatever. Why do I have to be naked?
Yeah, that was kind of nice. Yeah. It's like, that's true. But then you kind of die with
but I also
being over sexualized and everything.
Was she being over sexualized? I don't remember that.
I don't know. She's definitely, like, treated as an, like, bitchy blonde throughout, and maybe that's her character, but, like, anything valid that she has to say because of her attitude of, like, whatever, like, that's so, that kind of, in a way, negates any goodwill.
What, you know what that reminds me of?
What?
Is kind of the opening of Two, where it's like, we're gonna talk about how black people are mistreated, and then we're gonna mistreat them.
Yeah, you're right, definitely.
Yeah, like, just because you're being meta doesn't excuse you, and I think that's something that... Yeah, but I did definitely like her hiding in all the costumes of the killer and the prop, like her using props to try to fight and it not really working.
Yeah.
There were definitely fun little things there. And actually, I should throw in, while we're talking about this, the whole Sydney in the sets, running through the sets of her old house and everything.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was very clever and was a lot
of fun. Oh, no, that was definitely clever. Yeah. You brought up the point of, like, I wonder how many, if these are, like, the actual sets from the first movie.
I know, that's like, I mean, I'm sure they probably had to... maybe change them up a little bit, but it could have easily been.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, but it was Jenny McCarthy, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to try not to let my biases of the real people influence the roles that they're playing. But I definitely agree with you about the scene being, like, good and surprising.
Yeah.
But not surprising that she was the first one to die.
Yeah. Stephen Stone, the bodyguard, not a lot to say. He played his well. It was
he
fine. Was,
he played his well.
But he did a good job. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't have a ton, but I liked his little bits.
It was like, he's a jerk to Dewey, and then he dies in Dewey's trailer.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I didn't understand the call. Like, I still don't get it.
Why he was called to come back to the house if the killer was just going to kill him out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really get it either. Some of the stuff the killer does, I'm like, well, I don't really get what you're doing here, but if I understood the mind of a homicidal maniac, I know how a homicidal maniac thinks, or whatever the hell
that stupid line is. Yeah, Dewey. That was a great line, and Gail looking at Dewey like, what? I was like, great, Dewey's still an idiot. I like this.
Oh, man, yeah. We haven't really mentioned the fact that, in general, maybe one of the weaker parts about this movie. We talked about how people are cartoonish, but just that all the side people, like in 2, there were some side people that you actually connected with or were somewhat well written, and this, it's very cartoony, very over the top, very annoying.
Well, the thing is that they're caricatures.
Yeah.
Like, these people are caricatures of real characters that we did know.
Yeah.
And, but, so it's like this weird, like, alter ego thing of, like, they're their own person, but they're not, because they're playing a person that we've already kind of either liked or didn't like, whatever, we had an opinion on them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, that's another, like, disconnect of, like, you're not as good, or, like, I don't care about you as much as I cared about that first person, and that kind of goes...
Tom, the guy who plays Dewey.
Yeah.
Who... I'll say performance-wise, I think is one of the stronger performances. Yes! Like, I believe his character.
I agree. Of, like, I really liked his face-off earlier with Gail.
Yeah, yeah.
About the car. Like, you had to report on crashing my car. Real mature.
Yeah, great journalism there.
Great journalism, yeah. I have to say, the way he dies. You were just talking about, like, what the killer does is really stupid. I like the idea of the fax machine. Like, the faxes of the new script, so to speak.
Again, very smart idea.
Right. And it kind of connects back to the director being the killer, because even Sarah was like, the director is, like, more new pages, you're seeing new pages. Yeah. Like, we kind of have this idea of, and the meta-narrative, because in real life, there were rewrites, there were new pages day of shooting, like, all of this. So it's kind of like, oh, it is the director, because the director is, like, encouraging this to happen.
And there's also something fun about the creator of this movie making the director the murderer.
Yeah.
You know, like,
let's see. Yeah, so I kind of like the whole part where fake Gail Jennifer, where she's the one encouraging the pages first and they're running in and out in and out of the house. But I don't understand why the director would know that if he cut the power, they would use a lighter to try to read.
I mean,
I don't understand.
Here's the thing. I understood what your point when we were walking movie was, why doesn't he just run out to the rest of them and use the moonlight?
Yeah.
And that makes sense. I will say, on a basic level, I mean, the first thing that a person does when the power goes out is light a candle. So, like, in that...
Not when you're about to be murdered.
Yeah, so in that way, I kind of get where he might think that might happen, but... It's a little bit suspect, but it doesn't bother me as much. It is, to me, an example of them just wanting to up the ante because it's the third movie.
I suppose.
Because I don't even really feel like an explosion really fits in the Scream universe. Like,
I agree.
You know, like, this guy doesn't use guns. Why would he blow something up? Like,
no. Well, here's another thing. When I was putting together our list of chronological deaths, I saw in the Wikipedia article that they kind of intentionally... They made the violence a bit more cartoony and unrealistic because this was in the wake... there was more
actual heat. Violence.
Well, it was in the wake of Columbine.
Yeah.
And even though that... there, like you said, there aren't a lot of guns and things in these movies.
As far as the killer. Until the
ghost
end.
Face. Yeah. Still, it's one of those things where they kind of elevated the violence because so much... heat was on directors and writers and creators for making violence too realistic, potentially, and, like, encouraging it.
Yeah.
I mean, this debate still goes on of, like, how much of what we see on TV and in media movies encourages real-life violence.
I definitely remember there was a Television Critics Association press tour in the wake of, I want to say, God, we've had so many shootings recently that I can't even remember what specific one, but one of the big school shootings... There was the TCA press tour, and it was right before the following Hannibal and Bates Motel were going to come out.
I think I remember this. Yeah,
it was messy. Yeah. The reporters were really going after them, and like you know.
Jeez. You know. I mean, those are really dark shows. Yeah. But, yeah. So. The debate continues, clearly. Yeah. So
the next, I think the next person who dies, also you missed the producer guy, which we'll get to in a second.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about him. Yeah. Well, he wasn't even mentioned in the Wikipedia.
Yeah. So Angelina, the fake Sydney, another example where it's, like, sort of, like, she has her own personality, she is, like, doe-eyed or whatever, and then you find out she actually slept her way to get there, but she still, like, is sort of innocent and, like, wants
to the innocent ingenue, and, I think that's what, Tom calls her.
Yeah, she's very much a stereotype, and it's just, like, I'm not connected to this character, she's too flighty, or I don't know.
Well, how much of it was supposed to be, like, she's like this to make her suspicious?
Probably to a significant degree.
Because that's what I was saying. I was like, it's too obvious if fake Sydney is...
Yeah.
Especially when they catch her with the ghost face costume.
Yeah, yeah. Like, because that all... Yeah, because that in some ways would have made a lot of sense to be like, Sydney versus fake Sydney, I want to replace you, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Like, I will play you in this conclusion.
That actually kind of makes more sense that it's like, if she was the half-sibling being like, I always wanted to be you, now I am becoming you.
Maybe.
Yeah, in some ways that makes more sense than the director, but...
Twins. No, she would have been too old.
yeah.
Yeah, but I get what you're saying. Like, the trope of, like, when she's found with the ghost face costume, it's Sydney finding her.
Yeah.
When she's climbing into a bathroom stall, like, that trope of, like, oh, I'm hiding in the bathroom. Yeah.
Well, it's also, I think, supposed to be reflected, the reason Sydney reacts so well is because of that happening in the first movie.
Exactly. Like, that being parallel. Which, again, was, like, I feel like this should be a strike for the it is her column.
Yeah.
But it was actually a strike against it being her. Yeah. So...
Tyson is the only thing I really have to say about him. So he has a couple of, like, solid lines. The actor does a fine job, but it feels like a step backwards as far as, like, even though last, you know, we talked about in Scream 2, the opening and killing off the two black characters wasn't great, but they had the cameraman, who is smart and a good character and survives the whole movie, whereas this character is basically nothing. He has, like, the least amount of personality of anybody in the movie, and then he just dies.
Yeah. It's like, oh, you're just knockoff Randy, I think they call him.
Yeah.
He is. Yeah, barely. Mean, like, he's got a tiny sliver of personality, and that's it.
Yeah.
And it's the guy who played Kenny on The Cosby Show.
Hmm.
So, yeah.
Fun fact.
I don't know what he's doing nowadays.
Then we have Jennifer Jolie, who's the fake Gale.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you have the names right here.
I hope I do. Wikipedia may or may not be reliable. Again, see, that's the thing. We didn't remember anybody's name.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea who Tyson was.
No.
Yeah.
No. You asked me, like, who's Angelina? And I'm like, fake Sydney. I was like, oh. And I pointed out, oh, wait, they have a character named Angelina, and then they have a character with the last name Jolie.
Yeah.
What? Why?
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
There's a couple weird things like that, like with, they also have, what's her name from Star Wars?
Carrie Fisher.
It's
like, oh, yeah.
That was
like, I get mixed up with her all the time.
I mean, it was kind of fun, but also it's like, what?
Why?
what does this add?
Yeah.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Sorry we're blowing out the levels, guys.
We are very, very confused by Carrie Fisher. All hail Carrie Fisher.
So let's talk a little bit about the producer and the...
Wait, just going back to Jennifer Gale for a second.
Oh, yeah, we didn't talk about her that much.
Yeah. So she's stabbed in this, like, secret passage.
Yeah.
By the killer.
Yeah.
And she's, like, banging against these mirrors, and I feel like it takes far too long. Like, I know it's to build up tension, but I'm like, just, how stupid is Dewey? Like, why would the mirrors be...
Moving.
Shaking like that. Like, that was just annoying. And then Gale comes in. It was just dumb. And then it makes it look like he has helped the killer by potentially shooting...
Yeah.
Jennifer. Whatever, fake Gale.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah.
Like, after she's been stabbed, but still, it's like, oh no, bam, and then she just falls out. They don't even touch her body. They don't even check to see if she's actually dead.
I feel like that scene was supposed to be, like, one of those set pieces that's, like, really, like, oh, this would be so crazy, and, like, the tension would be so high, like the car thing in 2, or the sound, remember there's this, like, the soundproof room thing in 2, and even, you know what I think does a much better job of this is in Scream the TV show when Brooke is in the cooler and is being stabbed.
Yeah.
Like, that is like, oh, this is like a crazy situation that's like really scary. Like, you can't put yourself in this position, but like, the idea, if you were, that's like a nightmare.
It is.
Yeah. And so
I'm like, claustrophobic and terrified.
And so I think the idea there is like, oh, she can see them, but they can't see her or hear her. And it's like freaky. And I like, it just didn't work in the same way that these other ones did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So let's talk about the Miller or whatever.
Melvin?
Whoever the producer was.
Sleazy producer guy.
Pervert producer.
Of the Stab movies.
I think he did... So actually, no, actually, hold on. Let's talk about Jennifer as far as her character before her death.
Fair enough.
For a second, yeah. As far as... I thought that she was the one with the most inconsistent acting. And her and, honestly, a little bit of Dewey and Gale at times.
But she was, like, their third.
Yeah. And she... wasn't like she was probably the most full character of the new people, I guess, but
she's given the most screen time.
Yeah, but I didn't feel any connection to her.
She was the most cartoony. Yeah. Like, she was ridiculous. Yeah. Very overacting.
Yeah, and it just created this weird thing of Dewey going for the fake Gale. It was just strange.
So odd. Yeah. Yeah. And her being like, I'm fake you. I would have been better. Like, this isn't my Gale. It's like, well, we already have one Gale. Yeah. I don't want a second Gale.
Yeah.
I'm saying the word Gale so much it's not even sounding real anymore.
Yeah. All right. But so as far as the producer, I think he does a solid job acting-wise. Like, I buy into him.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the big reveal of everything that happened with Sydney's mom.
Yeah.
And sort of that old Hollywood tale and how Hollywood corrupts people and messes with people. And
taking away innocence. Yeah. And...
now, I'm blanking. I definitely studied... when we studied horror films in school and in my college classes, I'm trying to remember if the people had issues with her mom from the first movie or from the third movie. Because they were talking about... how, at the end of the day, like, even though Sydney was supposed to be sort of a new character because she has sex and still survives and everything, that they're trying for a new thing here, that at the end of the day, the mom being a quote-unquote slut is what creates everything happening. Mm-hmm. I actually think that in some ways this movie fixes that. I don't know if people agree with that. I'm trying to remember. But, like, because in the first movie you can say, like, oh, she slept with Billy's mom and that's what... that would be interesting. Billy's dad... stuff with Billy's dad, and that's what set everything off.
Right.
But now you find out that men raped her, and that's what set everything off.
But so. I don't like that of, like, you can't... like, looking for sexual gratification only happens if you've had a horrifying... like, if you've had a scarring sexual experience.
Well, that, like, that aspect, sure, yeah. I can certainly see that, too.
Like, she's forever, like... scarred. I mean, that's a different kind of scarring.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't call that unrealistic.
I don't. I don't know enough about the psychology about this, but
I feel like Sydney. Actually, do we know? I guess we don't really know if he ever sleeps with her boyfriend from two.
We don't.
Yeah, but I was gonna say I feel like Sydney was a positive example of you can, but she doesn't. She is so messed up by her mom too. Yeah, it's all a. It could be worse, I guess, is what I'm going to say.
When Sydney's in her house again, like, in the house, they have the echo, the repetition of, like, would you settle for a PG-13 relationship? Yeah. So they kind of re-emphasize the importance of, like, sex in a slasher movie without showing it.
See, now, I don't know if... that wasn't what I took from that. I can see why you would take that from that, but okay. I took it more as just her remembering... back to that time and where it all started.
I think it's both. I think it's both. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Yeah. It's interesting.
I'll be honest. I don't love
the backstory.
It would be fine if it didn't have the connotation. Like, if they didn't explicitly say, like, that's why she's a slut when she was like,
The
gender politics here are very iffy.
Yeah, I think that for the time they were trying to do something good, but I don't think they would have done that nowadays.
Maybe? Who knows? Well, I don't think we're as
people,
far...
people trying to do good, I don't think would have done that nowadays.
I suppose, yeah.
Because I do think that they were trying to be a little bit better.
Well-intentioned, I mean, at what point did I call it? Because I think I even, like, spoke it out loud of, like, Sydney has a half-sibling. And it was, the result of a rape when her mom was in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember at which point I said it out loud to you before it was revealed, but I was definitely thinking it somewhere in the middle of Act 2.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. And, I mean, we also, here's the thing is that now, I mean, I don't want to get into super spoilers about Scream and Scream Queens, Scream the TV show and Scream Queens, but, like, I mean, now you've seen that trope twice, and so, like, and so now this, for you, this is the third time, whereas for me, when they did it on this TV show...
It's the third time on this podcast, let's put it that way. Yeah. It's been countless times in just pop culture at this point.
But I'm gonna say, but like, when this movie came out, it wasn't as much of a thing. Mm-hmm. Still not my favorite, still my probably my least favorite killer reveal, but it wasn't as, oh my god, this again.
Right.
And whereas on the flip side... Seeing it, and that made this reveal in the Scream TV show all the more worse, where it's like, literally, Scream has already done this. Like, forget about all the other things that have already done this, but Scream itself has already done this.
Yeah.
You know? And so that was, yeah, the half-sibling thing.
That's another reason... Oh, well, again...
What?
No, I can't discuss this because we don't want to do Scream spoilers.
No, okay, we can say
Scream
a little...
Scream the TV series.
No, you can say Scream. We can say, just...
Alright, skip forward, like, a minute... If you don't want Scream TV series spoilers, but I'm surprised starting now. But I'm surprised that the TV series would have done something that was done in one of the Scream movies.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
like that's just
it seems really yeah
dumb.
Yeah,
because I just don't understand why. Like if they're counting on the weight of the franchise, to kind of carry them through.
Yeah,
then I mean I don't know how many people. I'm not one of the people who saw the Scream movies watching Scream the TV series, but the only reason I started watching it was for, like, you and for this podcast. So maybe the people who watch it already, they already saw it, so maybe they, like, weren't they already predicting something like this? Or was it the double reverse thing of, like, we don't expect it because the movie actually did this?
I totally saw that whole thing. I mean, I didn't know exactly who the sibling would be, but I totally saw the fact that it would be a sibling coming from a mile off. And the thing is, there are probably plenty of like young people watching MTV who just like saw the commercials and started watching, having not seen the movies.
Right.
But I'd be willing to bet that if they became a fan of the show, that like maybe a few episodes in they started watching the movies, especially because MTV was showing
airing them.
And so
they must have bleeped a lot of F words, especially in this in Scream 3.
There were a lot.
This is PG-13, right?
Yeah.
Damn, they were swearing.
Wait, this movie? No, this is R.
Oh, this one was R?
Yeah, this is R. Okay. All the Scream movies are
R. Oh, they are?
Yeah, they're very violent.
They are.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're not like Sydney.
They showed R movies on MTV?
I'm pretty sure. I might be wrong.
That's why I'm like, really? They must be PG-13 if they were on MTV. Oh, never mind.
I'm pretty sure I saw Scream 3 on MTV. But,
Anyway.
Either way, you know, it's... Yeah, it was just... that wasn't great.
No.
So do we want to talk about Roman? I mean, he was passable, is what I would say.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't... He was probably one of the least enjoyable villains.
He wasn't crazy. Like, he was crazy. Yeah. But he didn't have that mania that we always talk about.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, a little bit, but not over... He wasn't overacting in the reveal.
Yeah, and I like his... It's Scott Foley, right?
Yeah.
I like him a lot, but I don't... I just don't think that they gave him much to do here. And it really is, like, a Law of Diminishing Returns from the first movie with Billy and Stewie were just so...
Stew.
Yeah. It's all the A's and the...
A's.
Yeah, they were just so great to just kick things off. Mm-hmm. And I think that, this is, to me, probably my least favorite reveal of the killer.
I mean, part of it is, like, I have to applaud them in some ways because it's like, oh, they did a good job of, like...
Hiding who it would be.
Of, like, really drawing our attention away from him in that he's even taken into police questioning.
Yeah.
And he sets it up that it didn't come from his phone. And then he's released. And we know he's released. And then I think it was Jennifer who It was Gail who finds him in that fake he faked his death in that coffin.
Yeah. And we should talk about the cop, Kincaid, that they do set up Kincaid being the potential villain very well.
The potential villain and, like, the potential half-sibling.
Yeah. Were you surprised by the lack of two killers?
I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, that's the only time they have.
I'm okay with that. Yeah. If anything, that would have overstuffed it a bit.
Yeah.
Like, too much.
Yeah.
But then how was he... Then the funky timing and...
Yeah, how did he get everywhere? Yeah. But... I don't know. I will say, as much as there were comical over-the-top things, I appreciated throughout the movie, the continued use of letting even the small scale players be able to hurt the killer a little bit, like, yes, even like Cotton's girlfriend.
There was a good amount of fighting back.
And not going the supernatural route and letting him have a vest and everything like that, you know. That was good. Yeah, and again, I think that Sydney did a good job of fighting him. That was a good fun scene. And Kincaid, I like Kincaid. There are weird points to him where he has some silly one-liners and stuff.
Oh, definitely. But, like, definitely weird ones. Yeah. Like, they make him suspicious enough when he's left alone with Sydney. Yeah. And everything. Oh, no. I liked Kincaid. I liked the drama and tension of, like, could it be him? No. But could it? No. So I think that was satisfying enough.
Yeah.
I have to say, I really... My favorite part of the movie was the face-off.
At the end.
At the end.
Yeah.
Just the choreography of it was amazing. Yeah. And just everything. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I think that's the part that I made fun of the least.
Yeah, and I think that's... You know, Sydney is a full person and is a hero at the same time. Mm-hmm. You know, like, she feel like you can really connect to her. And I think that there is something, you know, she finds her inner strength to go and save everybody, and that's great.
Yeah. And I really like the fact that the villain does come back before our very eyes, but then they shoot him in the head, which is something that we always ask for in everything. Yeah. But it's like, headshots are hard. And it's like, Dewey's a cop. Like, he was anyway. Yeah. So he pulls that off. And I like the tender moment before that of the weirdness of, like, Sydney after having stabbed Roman through his bulletproof vest, I guess.
Like, he has a badass.
Whatever.
This is the same knife that can cut through a stall in a...
That's true. It's a magic knife.
And the TV show can stab through a freezer thing.
Well, this is my point where it's like, he's wearing a bulletproof vest. You know it's bulletproof, but you can stab your knife through it, and you think he's going to stay down? Like, of course he's going to pop back up. I guess you stabbed him through a vest. And that's not how vests work. Like, it just wouldn't go through. Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of issue there. But that aside, I'm making fun of it now. Yeah. of, like, he's dying, and she's, like, holding his hand.
Yeah.
And that kind of reflection of, like, her, she could have easily become a psychotic killer after everything.
Yeah.
They set it up enough,
and
now she's staring at her blood. Who is a psychotic killer, and they have their mother to thank for everything in a way, and
or Hollywood itself.
Hollywood itself, the real villain. But I mean, in terms of, like, their connection is the mother and how she did her best, but, like, failed both of them.
Yeah, I do want to throw in one last thing about Sydney, which is that I was just thinking about. I think part of what makes this movie suffer is the amount of time spent on everybody besides her, and that she, as the protagonist, is not very present for a lot of the movie.
That's true.
And there's so much time spent with Gale and with these random actors that are like, purposely, like, caricatures of Hollywood, and it's like, I want to watch the person that I care about go through stuff, as opposed to, and, like, she's at her place for a little bit too long, and she doesn't do enough when she has her, like, interesting beginning and great ending, but, like, throughout the whole middle, it's all this other random bullshit, and...
Yeah, definitely. Well,
we did it! We screamed 3... And I'm excited to Scream 4 at some point whenever we get time, because I really like Scream 4. So if you want to send in feedback about this Scream 3, or if in preparation for Scream 4, I'll hide it from Olga. And
the only time it's okay to hide things from your girlfriend.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Scream 4. So
you've made that very clear.
I like, it's fun. It's just enjoyable, okay? It's an enjoyable romp in the hay.
Oh, jeez.
All right. Anything else? Scream you later.
Oh, God.